You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
Hello out there in archaeology podcast land. This is Dr. Alan Garfinkel. I'm the president and founder of the California Rock Art Foundation. And what we do is we identify, evaluate, manage, and conserve rock art both in Alta California and in Baja California. We conduct field trips, we have trainings, exercise, we do research, and in every way possible, we try to preserve, protect, and coordinate treasures of Alta and Baja California rock art, of which there are many and diverse. We also work closely with Native Americans and partner with them to recognize and protect sacred sites. So for more info about the fabulous California Rock Art Foundation, you can go to carockart.org. Also, I'm open to give me a call, 805-312-2261. We would welcome sponsorship or underwriting, helping us to defray the costs of our podcasts, and also membership in California Rock Art Foundation. And of course, donations, since we are a 501c3 nonprofit scientific and educational corporation. God bless everyone out there in podcast land.
You're listening to the Rock Art Podcast. Join us every week for fascinating tales of rock art, adventure, and archaeology. Find our contact info in the show notes and send us your suggestions.
Hello out there in archaeology podcast land. This is your host, Dr. Alan Garfinkel, and it's episode 131. Believe it or not, we've been on the air or through the electronic medium for, I believe, close to 4 years, if not 4 years already. And way back when, almost about three or four years ago, we had an interview with Jose Botello, and it was rather interesting and intriguing. And for some cosmic reason, I called him up, and lo and behold, he's finishing up his master's degree at Cal State Northridge and doing extraordinarily well. And I thought it important to talk to him about his thesis and his adventure in life. Jose, are you here?
Yes, I'm here, Dr. Gold. Thank you for having
Great.
Me again.
Well, the way we kick this off, as we did last time, maybe we can bring the listeners up on your adventure.
Yeah.
Life.
I'd love to share. Yeah. So it's been, well, I want to say, what, 3 or 4 years since we did our last recording together, our last interview.
How has life changed for you?
Oh, life has changed drastically. I have started participating in a ceremonial dance group, the Aztec Mexica dance group, for the last few years now. And that has opened a lot of doors with the Native and Indigenous communities here in Kern County and all around California as well. So I've been, living the red road, walking the red road, as we like to say now, living as our ancestors did, or trying our best to keep those teachings, that knowledge, and our traditional ways of life. So that's something that has drastically changed since our last interview.
So you're reconnecting with your ancestors, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
And you're tapping into the religious theology and the ceremonies and the dance and the music and the ways of knowledge and the ways of connecting to the cosmic universe.
Exactly, yeah. And language as well. It's something that
and we language as well.
Our traditional languages, yes.
So what we're talking about here are the people who spoke, according to anthropologists, they call this the Nahua, correct?
The Nahua, yeah.
Yeah. Tell us who the Nahua are and what that implies.
Well, the Nahua aren't just one specific group of people. The Nahua are broken down. There are various groups of Nahuatl-speaking peoples in what we now call Mexico. For example, my ancestors, we were on the west central side of Mexico. I was born in a small pueblo called Mazatlan in Nayarit, Mexico. And that was the territory of the Tekoshki Nahua, and they were a Nahuatl-speaking group. But like I said before, there are other many Nahuatl-speaking groups all over Mexico.
Were the Maya and the Aztec Nahuatl?
No, the Maya are a completely different language.
But the Aztecs are Nahua.
Yeah, what we call the Aztecs are they?
Yeah, that's the terminology.
Yeah.
And I would believe the Huichol are also Nahua or no?
No, they're not considered Nahua, but their language is closely related, and I believe it is in the Uaztecan language
tree. Right.
Yeah.
So just so our listeners can understand, there's a large language group that are ancestrally connected when talking about thousands and thousands of years ago, and they're called the Uto-Aztecans. Do you know a bit about that, Jose?
All I know is there's groups up in California as well. The Tubarolabo are a Uto-Aztecan speaking group, and I want to see what else, what other groups.
So the Uto-Aztecans include speakers in Southern California, the Tokik, mm-hmm. and there's the groups all throughout the desert, the far west, throughout the Great Basin, and those are called Numic, and that's a group of Uto-Aztecans as well. So distantly, they're all distantly tied together, at least in an ancient way, as we call linguistically Uto-Aztecans. At least that's what the anthropologists call them.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, well, like I was saying, my ancestors are from the western, west central Mexico, and they were the Tekoshki Nahuatl. But most of the Nahua-speaking groups, they're very closely related. There's different variants of the language, but it's very, very small differences in the language.
And you're saying that you've now connected with some of that, and that's even through, I guess, your connections in Kern County, but also Southern California and perhaps in Mexico itself, no?
Yes, that's correct. Through joining a dance group, a ceremonial dance group, which we call the Nahuatl word for that is Kalpuli, which translates to the gathering of houses. And these are groups now contemporary that are formed, usually led by an elder or elders. And we learn, we teach our ceremonial dances, language, songs, traditional medicines, ceremonies and rituals such as the sweat lodge, which in Nahuatl is called Temazcali.
And so with dance, with language, with ceremony, all of that packaged up, I believe there's a heartfelt religious element to all this. Are there what's called Native American churches, or is there some other means of establishing the ceremonial realm?
I have heard about the Native American church. They're the peyote practitioners.
Yes, but is your organization or this organization different?
I'd say it is different because we don't really consider it a religion. It's more of a way of life. It's living in unity with the cosmos, with the universe, with Mother Earth, with all the animals, with all the plants.
So tell us a bit about how you learned about that and what those precepts are. And I guess for the listeners, why I have Jose here, this is an opportunity to learn almost directly from a native person and from someone actively involved in this, hearkening back to the indigenous religion and the philosophy and the vision and the worldview of those people who fashioned rock art in Eastern California and other places that were ancestral Nahua people. Am I correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In fact, when I was talking to Jose, what happened to me was I had mentioned this, you know, lengthy extended essay or book that I'm writing, which I've been working on for 4 years, that deals with sort of the religious metaphors of the Nahua and also talks about their imagery, including the cloud snakes that bring the rain. Okay, mm-hmm. I can segue to you now.
I'm still learning. I'm still spending time with my elders, and sure. I'm always going to keep learning. You know, you never stop learning. But from what I remember you when we were talking about that, I did recognize the Nahuatl name for the cloud serpents, and that translates to Mixcoatl. So Mixli is cloud, Coatl is snake in our language.
I never knew that. Mm-hmm. I didn't know there was a term for the cloud snakes, and it's Mixlicoatl. That the Coatl, the snakes itself, the serpents itself, is a key tether or hallmark connecting these ancient Nahua people and their drawings and imagery and religious metaphors, you know, through the up through the high cultures of Mexico.
Yeah, and from my understanding, the Mixcoatl, it does represent a lot of different natural phenomena. One of them would be the Milky Way at night. When you look at the Milky Way, it kind of resembles a snake, and it's also cloudy as well. So that's one of the representations of the Mixcoatl.
Is there a belief, or have you been taught anything about the Milky Way being a highway for souls as they pass from this world to the next?
I have heard it mentioned. We're still, you know, learning about that. There's only so much time I get to spend with my elders.
Of course, of course. Well, let's focus on the knowledge, or how it affected you psychologically, spiritually, physically, intellectually, and talk about the dance group specifically, because I know that's what is in your heart and soul. I believe that's going to be the central subject of your master's thesis, correct?
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so the way it affected me, I mean, I've always been on this journey, on this red road. I felt since a kid, without even knowing, I've always been different. I've always had this just knowing, this feeling of just being connected to the outside world. And being under the tutelage of my teachers, these elders, I have learned to put all these practices and use them in my life. So the way I can, it's just so profound. It's so hard to find the words to explain my experience, to describe it and the way that it's changed my life. But it's just more of a feeling of knowing and belonging and being one with everything, with the universe.
What it does is anchor you both physiologically, psychologically, and supernaturally, psychically.
Exactly.
To you, to the earth, to all of the natural world, but most importantly, the supernatural world, the celestial kingdom, and sort of this cosmic worldview is something that was characteristic of indigenous people for thousands of years. Am I correct?
Yeah, that is correct. And that's one of the biggest teachings that I've learned so far in my journey, is that there is so much more to this world than what we can actually physically see. There's definitely things going on in the spiritual realm. There is no such thing as coincidences. Everything happens. It's all synchronicities. And our ancestors knew that. They had that knowledge of that.
And I've always called them God incidences, because of the supernatural connection of these parallel circumstances or favorable entrees that occur throughout one's life. Mm-hmm. Am I correct?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, that's a good place to stop. Let's stop for this first segment and pick up this conversation in the next. See you in the flip-flop, gang. Welcome back, gang, to the 131st episode of your Rock Art Podcast. Our guest scholar is Jose Botello, and we were talking about his experiences and perspective on Nahua, indigenous worldview, cosmologies, ceremonialism, and in general, the way in which he now sees the world. Well, let's continue this discussion. What does dance, or how does dance interact as an element of your sort of revelatory experience with the Nahua way of seeing?
Well, our dances, they are very carefully choreographed, as close to the traditional dances that were saved from our ancestors. Every dance, every step, every movement has a meaning. And there are certain times where we do a dance or certain ceremonies where we're supposed to do specific dances, but these dances, they either represent natural phenomena, they're honor dances, or they're dances that try to mimic celestial events as well.
So are these dances associated with certain costumes?
Customs or costumes?
Costumes, you know, regalia, costumes, etc.
Oh, regalia, yes, definitely.
Why don't you talk a bit about that, and then we'll get into the details of the dance. How's that?
Okay, yeah, we can do that for sure. So our regalia, for example, my regalia is very traditional. It's a white cotton pants with a white cotton shirt. And depending on your achievements, the amount of work that you have put in within your community, you start earning certain things that you're allowed to wear on yourself and on your regalia. So, for example, on my regalia, I earned my traditional Nahuatl name. And there was a ceremony that we had to do for that. And on my shirt, I am now allowed to wear my insignia. So my traditional name is Yei Koskakuautli. And that translates to three collared eagle or three condor. So I am now allowed to wear, let's say, condor feathers or vulture feathers in my regalia as well. There are also certain aspects that come with receiving and earning your traditional name that go with your regalia as well. So when we get our traditional names, our elder works with our calendar, our traditional calendar, the Tonalpowali, and we provide our elder with our birth date, the exact time, minute that we were born, the day that we were born, if possible, any natural phenomena that occurred on that day, such as rain or wind or anything of sorts. So what I did was I went back and I looked at the almanac when I was born. So when I was born, there was nothing. It was just a sunny day. So the elder takes this information and works with their traditional calendar, the Tonalpowali. And according to that information that was given, the elder comes up with a list of attributes that we are born with, that everyone is born with. And these attributes demonstrate the types of medicines that we work with, the types of medicines that we're allowed to work with, characteristics that come with our nature as well.
How many different dances do you do, and are they timed to certain seasons? Are they associated with certain celestial events? Yeah, let's go there for a moment.
Okay, so yeah, so there are different dances for different seasons as well. So the harvest season is coming up, and the dances that we would do for the season would be like the corn dance. Tlaoli would be one of them. Also the dance for rain, which would be the dance called Tlaloc, or Kiawit. Kiawit is our word for rain as well. So we would perform these dances in order to honor the rain and I guess you can say call it in as well, and to honor our ancestors, to honor the spirits of nature for allowing us to harvest and to be grateful for the blessings or the bounty that we were able to harvest.
Wonderful. So how does this all work into the religious or ceremonial cycle that you follow? In other words, which dances do you do? What do they represent? Very difficult to learn. Do any of them have certain animals associated with them or certain celestial events? Is there a winter solstice, summer solstice, etc.? You know, many different questions.
So the information that we receive from our elder after we earn our traditional name, It's called a Tonalamat. And this document of sorts explains in detail all of the dances that the person who earned their traditional name is supposed to learn and supposed to perform at certain times. So, for example, a piece of the information that we get in this Tonalamat is who our night guardian is, for example. So for mine, according to the day that I was born and the time, my night guardian is the jaguar, the ocelotzi. Mm-hmm. So that would make me have to learn the dance of the jaguar to honor my nawal, my nawali. That is my night guardian. Other dances, the eagle dance, the kwautli, or the istakwautli, the white eagle. That's also part of my Tonalama, my traditional name. And everyone has different ones. So I have, there's a member in our group, in our Kalpuli, who her traditional name is Yaotzin Masatl, which translates to little deer warrior. And so she has to learn all of the dances of the deer to honor her ancestral lineage, to honor her guardians and her spirit protectors.
Now, when you dance, do you dance alone or dance in a group?
No, we dance in a group. So it's always in a group. It's always in a circle as well. So again, we're always trying to represent these natural phenomena. So a circle, and we all dance together. We try to maintain as much balance in the circle as well. So ideally, it would be if there's a male, two males together, we can dance next to each other. So it has to be male, female, male, female, just to keep that energy, that balance inside of the sacred circle.
Okay. Hello out there, listeners to the Rock Art Podcast. This is segment 3 of episode 131 with Jose Botello, our guest scholar. We were talking about the elements of dance and cosmology and seasonality, the metaphor of the animals and the dance. Let's try to pick it up with that, Jose. We're trying to try to explain to them how this is done, why it's done, and then the manner in which it interacts with the universe and celebrates the cosmos. Am I correct, Jose?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Okay.
And again, it's all about just honoring these native phenomenons. I know I keep saying that, repeating that phrase.
But there's, when you say honoring the native phenomenon, you mentioned this to me on the phone.
Natural.
Yeah, natural phenomenon. But as the Uto Aztecans in California and elsewhere believe, there is a phenomenon, a element, a something intangible that sort of links everything together. They call it puha or buha. That is sort of this, the best term we can use is energy, but it's much more important than that. It's sort of a spiritual or cosmic force. Mm-hmm. And this is what is a central concept for this expression. Am I right?
Yeah, definitely. And
maybe talk a tiny bit about that if you could.
Yeah. And I know for some of the Nahua, the term for that, for the universe, the all-knowing, the great mystery, everything that is, everything that was, everything that's going to be, the past, the future, and the present, our name for that is Impalnemowani Inmoyokani Intlokenawake.
Easy for you to say, Jose. and what I can say to that, Vanna, buy me a vowel. So please continue.
So that is our worldview of what I guess you can call creator. Some people call it God. The universe is just everything that is.
It's an intangible force, correct? It's an intangible thing.
Intangible force,
and it connects everything.
Yes.
And do you also believe that even those things that conventional wisdom or the scientific or the Western world, the Cartesian way of thinking, that many of these things are inanimate, you would say they're not inanimate. They have this force and are alive. Am I correct or incorrect?
Definitely. Everything has energy. Everything is made up of energy.
Has
everything has life. Exactly.
Has sentience and anima.
Mm-hmm. See, yes.
It's the trees, the mountains, the water, the birds, the flowers, the everything,
fire, the air, the water, the earth, everything. Yes.
And so when you dance, you're celebrating or venerating or communicating with this life force
and invoking the life force
and invoking the life force. Okay. Mm-hmm. Please go on.
Yeah. So it all depends on the occasion, the ceremony that we're doing, the season. I know traditionally there were these certain time periods. There were these 13-day cycles or 20-day cycles, according to our Tonalpawali, our calendar. And these cycles guided us and let us know exactly what dances and what ceremonies were to be celebrated.
You mentioned Tlaloc, and Tlaloc, at least from the anthropological way, is a god of rain. So there must have been some sort of a rain dance or a rain experience or bringing water and life to the world that grows things and lets things proliferate. Am I correct?
Yeah. I mean, we wouldn't call him a deity.
No.
Tlaloc is just the water, the vertical waters.
The vertical water.
And that is only the waters that come from the sky.
Yes.
From the rain. We do have another energy that represents the horizontal waters, and that is Chalchihuitlicue.
Okay.
And that's the waters of lakes, of streams, of rivers.
Is there a feminine side to any of this theology? Is there a Mother Earth? Is there a Father Son? Or is that incorrect?
There is. So Mother Earth in our language would be Tonantzin, our Venerable Mother, or Tonantzin Tlalicoatlicue, our Venerable Earth Mother. Also, Coatlicue translates to she who wears the skirt of serpent.
Yes, I am very, very aware of both Tonantzin and Coatlicue. Continue, please.
And then as far as for the sun is Totatzin Tonatiuh, which translates to our Venerable Grandfather Sun, the one who gives us light, the one who gives us energy, the one who gives us heat.
Wonderful. So there is that particular set of cosmology that interfingers with the dance and the ceremony. When when you dance and you dance together in a circle, do you do this in a secluded area? Is it outside? Do you ever show people this dance, or is this something done in private?
No, these dances are public now. I know traditionally they were held as very sacred, and only to be practiced in ceremonial settings. But now, I mean, there's certain times where we are allowed to go and dance at gatherings or cultural demonstrations as well. So,
and these cultural demonstrations when you dance, this is rather different than that, you know, rather visually astounding Aztec dancers that I'm at least remotely familiar with, with all those feathers and the sound and this and that. That's not that's not what you're up to, correct?
Yes and no.
Yes and no. Okay, please explain.
Yes, we do wear feathers, but the way that my elders have taught me is that we earn our feathers. The types of feathers that you wear as well also have significant meaning. You know, we don't just go out there and put on a headdress full of feathers. We don't do that. We are also very mindful, like I said, about the types of feathers that we wear. So, for example, my headdress, I'm allowed to wear vulture feathers. I'm allowed to wear hawk feathers, eagle feathers, and long pheasant feathers as well. And that, again, comes with the knowing of our Tonalama when we earn our traditional name.
When you say wear these feathers, is it a headdress or is it individual feathers? Is it a ornate regalia or is it something rather simple?
It is a headdress, and our headdress is called a kopili.
Okay.
And there are certain times where we're allowed to wear them, and there's times where we're not, when we don't wear them. And I mean, it's also a personal choice if you want to wear your headdress or not. You don't have to wear it, because these feathers also serve as an antenna to connect to the cosmos and to connect to all the energies around us. So you're putting antennas on your head. So depending on where we go to dance, if it's like a public cultural demonstration, we might not want to have that antenna. We might not want to connect with that much energy, especially if you don't know how to work with that energy, how to move that energy. So I myself personally, I try not to wear my headdress as much. I try to connect without my feathers, but we are required to wear a red ribbon around our heads. This ribbon in our language is called the Ixcuamecac. And there's various teachings on this, the Ixcuamecac, the reasons that we wear them. Some teachers say that we wear it to protect our energy centers in our body. So we have that main energy center in our forehead. where the pineal gland is. So, and other teachers say that it represents, because there's a certain way to tie the knot in the back of your head, the Ishkwamekat. And these teachers explain that when we wear it around our heads, it represents both the male and the female. It represents duality, and tying it behind your head, it represents the duality, and it's yourself. So it's three.
So it represents the plus and the minus and the intermediary. It's sort of a...
Yeah, so it represents duality. Duality. Yes, and yourself as part of everything, part of the universe, part of the cosmos. And it allows us to pray.
One of the last things I think we can close with, and there's a lot more to say, certainly a lot more to talk about. Oh, talk about.
Yeah.
But there is an image on the rocks. And I think it's a concept that is relevant to all of this. And it's called the Quinsunk, or the Nahua Olin.
The Nahua Olin. Mm-hmm.
The fiveness of the universe, or the fiveness of the people. Do you have that in your religion or no?
Well, the Nahua Olin, the literal translation is the movement of the four directions. So Nahua, Nahui is the number four, and Olin translates to movement.
Yes.
So Nahua Olin, it represents just the movement of the cosmos, the movement of the seasons, the four phases of life, birth, adolescence, adult, death. Yeah. The four elements as well.
Right. Interestingly enough, that particular element, which is an element in the, the Aztec calendar, but also sort of the understanding of the Aztec world, the Nahua world, is one that appears on rock art, certainly in California, Eastern California, also the Desert West, and features prominently. It's normally called an enclosed cross. So it's a cross with a circle around it. And it also represents Venus, the morning star and the evening star. Have you heard that or no?
I have heard something about that. As far as the Venus star, the morning star, I've heard some people say that it's associated with the energy of Quetzalcoatl.
Okay.
Which is the Venus star, the bringer of knowledge.
Yes,
the bringer
of life. Yes. And then the morning star and the evening star are seen sort of as a, transformation, resurrection, birth, death, life, the spirit, all the above.
And that goes with the duality of Quetzalcoatl, which is Tezcatlipoca, which it's what you just said. It's transformation. Tezcatlipoca translates to the smoky obsidian mirror.
Yes. Oh, my word. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's more of energy that we use to do self-reflection, to do inner work, to do shadow work. So it's the duality of Quetzalcoatl.
Wow. Well, everything you said and more has great relevance to our study of the indigenous cosmology, our understanding of animism, shamanism. I call it the Native American perspectivism as well. And this ongoing conversation has been, I'd say, one of the most fascinating podcasts I've had in the 131 I've done so far. Is there anything you might want to tell our listeners as a signing off, maybe a prayer or something like that?
Oh, yeah, I would love to. I can do one of the prayers that I've learned from my elders. This prayer is to honor our ancestors, to honor the universe, to honor all of our relatives, our medicines. And it's in the Nahuatl language. So I can close off by doing that. Inish Pansinko. Impal ne mowani id moyokani in tlokenawake. Tlasokamati ometekutli juan omesihuat. Tlasokamati tlalotzin juan chalchihuetlikutzin. Tlasokamati nimitz lasotla totatzin tonati juan nanatzin mesli. Tlasokamati nimitz lasotla tonantzin tlaliko atlikwe. Tlasokamati tekwanime. Tlasokamati nochtin omekayotzin. Omete. Thank you, Dr. Gold.
Could you translate that as best, even briefly?
So it's thanking the universe, thanking our waters, both vertical or horizontal, thanking Mother Earth, thanking our grandfather sun, our grandmother moon, and thanking all of our relatives around the medicine wheel. So,
great way to close out. See you, listeners, on the flip-flop. Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to the Rock Art Podcast with Dr. Alan Garfinkel and Chris Webster. Find show notes and contact information at www.arcpodnet.com/rockart. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sharing this podcast with your family and friends. This episode was produced by Chris Webster from his RV traveling the United States, Tristan Boyle in Scotland, DigTech LLC, Cultural Media, and the Archaeology Podcast Network, and was edited by Rachel Roden.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.